This is the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart sitting in today for Leonard Lopate. Why were the Brazilian bikini wax, Viagra, and Fox News all invented in the 1990s? In his new book, The Naughty 90s, The Triumph of the American Libido, published by 12 Books, David Friend writes a sexual history of the sex scandal-ridden decade, helping us understand how it changed the way we think about sex and brought us all the way to the Trump teens. David Friend is a Vanity Fair editor, journalist, and Emmy-winning documentary producer. And it is my pleasure to welcome you to the show, David. Thank you for being here.
Jonathan, thank you.
Why the naughty 90s? How does naughty encapsulate the 90s attitude to sex?
You know, it's a term that I could not have imagined. It came out when I first thought of the book. I thought of the naughty 90s. In the 60s, we thought this was the liberating period. But suddenly, those people came of age. You had the baby boomers taking positions of power in Washington for the first time, Bill Clinton. His group. And then you had that happening on Madison Avenue. You had it happening on Hollywood. And basically, the counterculture became the culture. So the values of that from that period evolved to become common values, and we went left as a country, even though today we look at it differently, but we really did adopt that throughout society. So what happened? It impacted our attitudes towards sexuality. It impacted our attitudes toward human intimacy, and we saw the consequences, some negative, some positive, of what we'd wrought in the 90s with quote-unquote free love and what have you.
You write, quote, "The naughty 90s were a fin de siècle inflection point when an array of forces aligned and prompted a customarily prudish nation to face its deep fascination with and trepidations towards human sexuality in all its complexity. The decade, in sum, reconditioned Americans to accept themselves as profoundly sexual creatures."
Really? Well, I would.
We really accept ourselves as profoundly sexual creatures.
No, but we forced ourselves to look at that for the first time in a real way, I think. You'd be good at doing the audiobook, by the way. I love your voice. I did the audiobook. It was insane. 8 days of taping, 8 hour days. It was just brutal. But I have a bedside manner, so I'm sold. Or a face for radio. No, I think what we could not look at it. We were forced in the 60s to address some of these issues. In the 80s, there was the AIDS epidemic. Mm-hmm. We were talking about sex in the schools, in churches, over the kitchen table. And by the 90s, we had to focus on our own sexuality. What was happening? The headlines were focusing on a president's sexual encounters from the beginning of the campaign up through his impeachment. We had these new things called the internet, but the World Wide Web launched in 92-3, and so people were getting the whole sexual smorgasbord, it didn't matter your age, right off the bat. And we had, in the daytime, we're watching talk shows. In the night times, we were watching reality TV, a new phenomenon with MTV's Real World. And we were watching 24/7 news and reality TV, which we can talk about related to Clinton, related to Mr. Trump.
Right. Well, but okay, so you said the key word in all of this, and that's the internet. And so, you know, to me, naughty 90s, nothing exemplifies that more than AOL.
AOL, absolutely. We had Prodigy. We had other networking services and platforms that censored chat. AOL decided very early on not to include a censoring factor, and they had people could have free chats. And what led to almost immediately, almost overnight, was this illicit conversations that people would have with strangers, and then they would start hooking up. And hooking up was also a 90s phenomenon. We can talk about that too. But AOL was really, I talked to one AOL executive during the period who said to me, you know, this was the secret sauce of AOL was sex chat. And from that, they had Michael Wolff in the book talks about the period who had written the book Burn Rate. during the period. Talks about this whole notion of AOL having gone from to a subscription model, so that you could talk all the time about sex if you wanted to, with unlimited charges. So people were just, you know, were using the internet for other purposes, and porn became over time a real connection to people.
I mean, the Avenue Q has a whole song about you know, the internet was made for porn. So I want to read.
I think you're going to sing the book too. You'd be very good.
Well, there's this line. I think you are quoting Michael Wolff here. No, this is you. With the internet, you had people leading fantasy lives as at a new velocity. It was no longer the spirit of the 60s and we're all liberated. Instead, it's private, it's all furtive, and it's everywhere.
It sort of is still. And this is the issue with social media. Really began at the end of the 90s. You had 6degrees and other new platforms. You know, Facebook and MySpace didn't exist yet. But there was a new way of interacting and a new way of creating personalities, sexually and otherwise, that allowed us to put on new masks. And so this happened as social media began. We began to inhabit new selves. And this is really true, I think. Abigail Jones, who writes for Newsweek, is quoted in the book. She observes this as well with MTV. The real world really showed people acting out a better or worse, sometimes worse, more exaggerated version of themselves. And I think this is what we had is this voyeuristic, exhibitionistic behavior pattern that began where people were existing in order to have this social media echo. Mm-hmm. And we became that. Many of us who became fixated on it.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, in for Leonard Lopate, speaking with David Friend about his new book, The Naughty 90s, The Triumph of the American Libido, the real world being considered the first of the reality television shows. And now there's all of television seems like it is a reality show and people just acting out,
you know, it's
their worst selves.
So interesting. It was for in an article, oddly about, in his column, oddly about Seinfeld, Frank Rich made the comment in the New York Times, he was writing for the Times at the time, that in America, media had replaced nature as the background. And I think that's what had happened, is that we got obsessed with media and we got obsessed with reality shows and we got obsessed with we became a culture of watchers and not doers. As great as the community is to now coming together in Florida, helping people out, as important as it is to be civic-minded, much of the nation during the 90s and thereafter, people have gone out of work, they're plugged in and they're tuned out, and there's many people who are out of work, and what they do is they're couch potatoes, many people. Mm-hmm. And the young people are having a tough time getting in the workforce, and they are connecting through smartphones. And so I think we're really not necessarily living real lives anymore, but living mediated lives. And I think this is what's happening especially with our president, who I don't think would be the president of the United States had he not had taken on this reality show prominence in the 2000s and starting in the 90s when mm-hmm. he began having this World Wrestling Federation matches at his casinos in New Jersey. He began to appeal as a reality candidate.
Well, even before then, I mean, he's part of the naughty 90s, if not maybe the naughty 80s, sexual life, his private life played out on the front pages of the tabloids here in New York City.
Well, you're exactly right. The last week of 1989, during the holiday break, Donald Trump and Marla Maples, who he was seeing at the time, ran into his wife on the slopes of Aspen.
That's right, in Aspen.
Ivana Trump, and sure enough, there was a big to-do, and about a month later, the front page of the New York Post, as you say, said best sex I ever had. And we had the first big scandal of the 90s, which was related to Donald Trump. Throughout that year, as Michael Bloomberg said at the Democratic convention last year, you know, we all knew who he was, a con artist. The rest of the country found that fun. And I hate to say it, but I think one of the things that happened, despite all the things we'll learn this week from Hillary Clinton's book of why she lost, one of the reasons Donald Trump won, and I think one of the main reasons, was because of his looking at the campaign as a reality show. I know it sounds trite, but what happened was you had Jeff Zucker, who was running CNN, but had been running The Apprentice on NBC for Donald Trump, and you had Fox News, which was really state television for the Republican Party, and they recognize, boy, this is going to be great for ratings. It's something that Les Moonves also said on CBS. Right, it's going to be great for commercial advertising. And you had 31 debates and forums and town halls. Donald Trump was at the center of each one of them. Donald Trump was the ratings guy. He suddenly America was watching this, and he was doing. It was a great comment by David Gergen on CNN, which was that Donald Trump was a pro wrestling guy, and all the other candidates in the Republican Party and during the debates were boxers. So each one of them, as they were measuring up their points and jabs and what they were going to do next, he came in with a chair and hit him over the head.
But before there was President Trump, there was President Clinton. And we all know how he figures prominently in the naughty 90s. But you talk about the sex appeal of someone that I found rather interesting and curious, Newt Gingrich. He was Speaker Gingrich at the time. What's the sex appeal of Newt Gingrich?
There was, you know, but you and I may not, you know, it doesn't float our boat. But a lot of, you know, a lot of people looked at this young guy with the floppy hair, the professorial swagger, and looked at him as this, as a guy who brought in a lot of 45 and under, 300 some congressmen on the steps of the White House to have this contract with America. And there was this sense of vigor, and we're fighting back, and we're young, and we're going to make changes. And a lot of men and women I talked to who came to Washington during this period who were Republicans felt that people like Jack Kemp, people like Newt Gingrich and their kind at the time were really, were exciting and virile and, and they were ready to make change. In fact, we're living with that obstructionism to this very day, whether through John Boehner or now with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. And this is what we're having. No, he's neither Rush Limbaugh, nor Newt Gingrich, none of these stars on the right, Bill O'Reilly et al., are really studly. But they did show a macho character that you saw that you might not have seen. And I think one of the things I write about in the book is George Magazine, where John Kennedy Jr. Brought about this sort of sense that maybe politics is sexy. He decided to go ahead with that magazine when these two youngish guys, 40-something guys, Al Gore and Bill Clinton, became the candidates.
You bring up Fox and you bring up Bill O'Reilly, and as we know, the scandal that's rocking Fox News now, a lot of what was happening occurred in the 90s, also in the 2000s, but the culture there, it fits in with what you're talking about.
Predatory men and all across the board, Democrat and Republican.
In the little bit of time that we have left, you spent a lot of time talking about the naughty 90s from a political perspective, but there is a lot of stuff happening socially. We talked about reality television, but there were sex scandals in popular culture. I mean, you had Hugh Grant, you had Michael Jackson, and Anna Nicole Smith. I mean, how did that play into the naughty 90s?
I think there was an overheated sensibility in the culture. I mean, now it's become second nature, but we hadn't seen that before, where Everybody was looking to take somebody down. And I don't know if that really be, I think it did happen because in the 70s, you had this tabloid war between the Star and the Enquirer. When Rupert Murdoch bought the Star, you had the emergence in the 70s of the New York Post. You had People magazine that had come out. But by the 90s, novelist Thomas Mallon makes the point, tabloid TV came into your home almost like a utility, like running water or electricity. Scandal was everywhere, and everybody, 24/7, especially with cable news, you had to fill the time. Was really looking for scandal. So I think that fueled it.
I'm not going to ask you about the orgasmic meditation thing you went to. We'll leave that for another time. I've been speaking with Emmy-winning documentary producer David Friend about his new book, The Naughty 90s, The Triumph of the American Libido. This Thursday at 8 o'clock, David will be speaking at the 92nd Street Y. For more information, visit our show page at wnyc.org/lopate. David, thank you very much.
Thank you. A lot of fun.